Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Hey, welcome in, everyone. Thanks for joining us here on a Sunday morning. Education Parenting with Dom Giordano. Then the First Lady of Education, Kathy Gannon, will be along with her tips of the week as the school year closes out. But first, you talk about something educational. I had one of the best guests of the year on just a little while ago. In this past election, the white working class came out in force in Michigan, Wisconsin, and right here in Pennsylvania, particularly in rural areas. And they pushed Donald Trump to the presidency, changing history. I had on this great guest, Ms. Williams. She's a law professor, a liberal herself, but someone who's married to somebody, white working class, who became a member of another class, and her insights, White Working Class is the title of the book, were tremendous. Here's how it sounded. Joan, welcome to Philadelphia. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Delighted to be here.
Well, my standard of a book, when I have a long holiday like this, I could have read all of your book the last few days, but I didn't. I am a very disciplined person. I'm saving it up because I want something good to read over that period of time. I was ready to just gobble right through it. It is just brilliant insight and brilliant stuff. And I think you claim that you get this through your husband, who is Italian as I am. And I grew up in a middle-class neighborhood like he did in New York. And then he was a migrant to Harvard Law.
Actually, that is my high school boyfriend. My husband is from Waterbury, Connecticut.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
His father was a factory worker,
right,
who never earned more than $12,000 a year. And so I've been part of a white working class family for over 40 years.
Absolutely. Now, when we were talking about the working class, I think you distinguish it by income is the simplest way, from approximately 41,000 to about 131 or so?
Yeah, if you're going to use one thing, the best way is to look at who has a college degree and who's the poor. You exclude all those people, and the 53% in the middle, that's the middle class. Those are the people we commonly call the working class. They're actually, between you and me, the middle.
So, and you come at this, which is unique, from the perspective, you say that you're a progressive, looking at this whole thing. What's the biggest misconception? Because this can be tricky stuff. I think people genuinely, or at least to get their vote, they want to reach the white working class, and yet they can't figure them out.
Yeah, I think Democrats have had even more trouble than Republicans for a whole series of reasons. Democrats, for the past 40 years, have focused on, when they think of the role of government, they think of social programs. And the white working class tends to be very suspicious of the kinds of social programs that Democrats have focused most on, those that are targeted towards the poor. They're suspicious of them for a very simple reason. They're just one notch above, and they watch the poor getting benefits while they don't. Now, the white working class loves universal social programs like Medicare and Social Security. So a very concrete lesson for the Democrats is if you're a Republican, go for means-tested social programs.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be fragile, they'll be politically vulnerable, they'll be pretty chintzy. If you're a Democrat, go for universal social programs. Look at how Obamacare's the elements that were universal, the pre-existing condition and keep your kid on your insurance until 26, those became immediately popular. So that's one important issue for
mm-hmm.
Democrats from a policy standpoint. But I think what people need to understand is that the white working class, they resent the poor for the reasons that we've talked about. They also they admire the rich for very understandable reasons. These are people who have been order takers their whole lives. their the attractive fantasy to them is to be an order giver, like Mr. Trump. They'd love to be able to say you're fired. But they don't have day-to-day contact with the rich. The people they have day-to-day contact with is the college kids who are their supervisors, who don't know beans about my job but are perfectly willing to tell me how to do it, said one, although he didn't use the word beans. And so there's a lot of resentment. Teachers is another example. They feel teachers often feel teachers talk down at them and assume their kids are stupid, and that helps explain the backlash against teachers' unions in Wisconsin. So these three principles, resentment of the poor and professionals and admiration of the rich, go a long way towards explaining what happened in 2016.
Reading this book, it is so clear. You know, I was doing the election night coverage, and I never think Pennsylvania is ever going to, in my lifetime, go the other way, go to Republicans again. But it is so clear right now, and looking at your thesis and what you play out. So here are some of the pushbacks that Democrats and others still have, even if they talk the talk, Joan. And I think you try to answer them. Like, well, why don't these people, we play this cut all the time of Mrs. Clinton saying we're going to shut down coal and coal country, and you can either move or you can get these green energy jobs. Why don't they just move away from the bad circumstance of Appalachia and these other places?
You know, the professional managerial elites have national or global networks. We go away to college. We meet people from all over the country who establish our friendship network for the rest of our lives. People who don't go to college or who don't go away to college, that doesn't happen to them. They grow up with the same people. They're very rooted. They have the adult children are in their family's social networks for their entire lives, which is not true of elites, because they're providing child care. They're helping with house repairs. And at a more basic level, I mean, one of the reasons global elites can be global is, you know, I was just living in the Netherlands. People ask me, you know, what do you do? I'd say I'm a law professor. I immediately have high status. I tell the story in a book of going back to my husband's high school reunion, and he asked one of his former classmates, mm-hmm. what do you do? The guy said, I sell toilets.
Yeah.
There's no honor in that. And so what you do is you keep close to home to people
right.
who actually know your character. That's where their social honor stems from. So there are economic reasons to stay. You would lose your child care. There are reasons having to do with who is your friends and where your social honor lies. And we all need social honor.
It is amazing that you are able to, you know, coming from your perspective versus many, many people who would have your degrees or be in your situation and just don't want to study these folks, honestly, don't want to get past this. Now, did I read it right, too, in one interview prior to the book or when the book came out, saying your husband convinced you to take out the part if Trump fails the white working class,
yes.
more Timothy McVeighs will be out there?
Yeah. Well, first my editor wouldn't put it in,
yeah.
and then my husband told me that I would be foolish to put it in. But, you know, people go, well, Trump is going to disappoint these voters. He's not going to give them jobs, which is the key thing, in my view, that they're focused on. And then we can just wait until we have a majority-minority nation and not pay attention to these people. And first of all, I think that's really heartless. These are Americans who have really gotten fried by the American economic system. And number two, I think it's not a very good idea, just strategically. There's a lot of anger out there. I mean, we're voting with our middle finger, said one
mm-hmm.
Trump voter. Anger doesn't go away in this kind of context. And if we don't address it politically, I fear for the consequences for the country. I mean, we've already voted someone who I consider a pretty unsuitable candidate, very impulsive, not very knowledgeable. And, you know, compared to what could happen, that could be the good news.
Now, parting question for Joan Williams, the book, too, White Working Class, Overcoming Class Cluelessness. That's the key word. I think that's just a brilliant title. But, Joan, in one of these interviews, I think, too, when asked, what has President Trump delivered in the few months he's had to the white working class since his election? And you say dignity.
Yeah, he feels that they often feel that they have been dissed and dismissed by both the Democratic and the Republican parties, and that President Trump has talked directly to them, called them the forgotten, which is just what they feel, talked to them about jobs that will yield a modest middle-class standard of living, which is at core what they're really, really concerned about, and said to them, I'm going to stand up for you against these elites that belittle you. And do the elites belittle the white working class? Of course they do. Look at Homer Simpson. He's a caricature of a white working class guy. Look at Archie Bunker earlier, who was stupid, racist, bigoted. Even look at Pennsylvania, a character from the first season of Orange is the New Black, who's kind of a caricature of a coarse, a peasant who's coarse in appearance and moral stature. This is a caricature of peasants that we inherit from Europe. And this is the kind of, look at the white trash bash, which is a common form of party at fraternities. I mean, would you like to go to college if you and your family were called garbage to your face? There have been a lot of dignitary affronts, very unselfconsciously delivered.
Well, I have to say, this is just a brilliant book. It's almost a textbook, Joan, for what I deal with on a daily basis and what's happened here. Have you ever corresponded with Zelina Zito? Do you know of her work?
I don't. I will definitely look
it up. Yeah, Zito. She's the woman that was out there in rural Pennsylvania, Ohio, and the rest, predicting this and chronicling this. Parting question, what is it like for you as a progressive, as a feminist, and there's a lot in this book that's probably for another book for you, are you well received with this in academic circles or not, or is there pushback on it?
You know, I've written about gender. I'm written about race. Pushback is kind of my middle name. there's going to be pushback. This is not the conventional wisdom, but hey, there it is. That's life in the big city.
Absolutely, white working class. Thank you, Joan. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for your interest.
All right, as I said, that was just unbelievable stuff. Exactly on point, and yet the other side still won't give it up and continues to talk about the Russians versus reaching these Americans. Coming up, the First Lady of Education, Kathy Gana. She'll be here with her tips of the week. Okay, everyone, let's bring in the First Lady of Education, Kathy Gana, as we turn toward the end of the school year. Kathy, what do you have for us this week?
This week I thought we'd talk about teachers at the end of the year.
Okay.
A lot of teachers get gifts the last day, but I think they need them now. It would be a unique, non-traditional way of saying thank you to actually have your child write a little note. And if the parent usually gives a gift at the very last day to let the teachers know they're appreciated these last weeks. When the teachers come from public schools and to tutor at our tutoring studio, it's amazing how they start to look so drained toward the end of the year. And New Hope Academy's teachers, too. We're doing a lot of things trying to keep them with that spark at this time of the year. It's just everybody's weary. And so, of course, when kids don't know the answers or they're fooling around a little bit too much, now, you know, with the crazy weather, we don't get as much spring fever, I think, this year. We were all talking about that. The kids just seem more settled into waiting for the good spring or summer weather to come and to stay. But the teachers really are a big part of every child's success. And when they're frustrated, it's easier for them to call the child out on a discipline situation and also just not be as patient when the hands are up and asking questions, et cetera. So I wish the parents and grandparents would see the major connection between your child's education and the state of mind of a teacher. We're very human also, and head and heart before the brain there too. Sometimes if schools did a little bit more to show appreciation for the teachers so that their mindset would be changed and a little stronger as a team, I believe that public schools and all, it would definitely bring up the morale and help everybody to feel that what they're doing is not wasted and that the children and their parents are appreciating things. So again, some traditions are fine and they're wonderful sometimes, but this is a tradition of giving gifts the last day that I think I'd love to see the parents start to give them a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks before, and let them know that they're appreciated. And it also is a great time, again, for a talk, communicating with your child about the teachers and that they are human beings in the same way, and they have their families and their problems, and what generosity is. Again, the whole enabled generation thing. Enabled means you're not seeing gratitude. They think it's owed to them. So telling them that you want to show gratitude to the teacher is a nice chance to talk about kindness and gratitude at any age. And give those secondary teachers some cards with notes or tiny presents, because it is a shame. The grade school teachers get the most presents, middle school a little bit. But the secondary teachers, and the kids are not, you know, we have less and less kids coming out and becoming secondary teachers. They all want to be elementary and special ed. Of course, we need special ed, but we need special ed in high school as well. So I think that getting a teenager to write three sentences on a card and give it to the teacher is teaching that child more than she could learn in any one day of school. So I wrote a little poem a couple years ago called Teachers, End of School Year Thoughts. And hopefully somebody will hear this in teacher land and call for it and read it to the teachers in a faculty meeting. And maybe it'll just help them to get through these last weeks.
Okay.
Okay, so another school year's over, God, and I still have my sanity. I've learned a lot and changed some lives in spite of my humanity. But now I need to be recharged. I want to feel your healing peace. The children's voices bring me joy, but now I need it all to cease. No one but you could understand how tired and how drained I feel. I've been in a vicious cycle. Please stop the turning of this wheel. The summer's breeze will dry the tears I shed when I could not do more. The ocean scent will clear my head of seeing teaching as a chore. In September, I'll be stronger. I'll be ready to start anew. I'll see each child as a gift. Each one I will know is from you. For now, I'll take the time to rest. I'll swim and I'll play and I'll read. And come the new school year next fall, as teacher, I'll follow your lead. So, some positive words out there. Hopefully get the teachers through these last weeks, and then they can all get a little soothing and take some emotional showers and be all fit to go in a few months. In September, we start all over.
That's a new Kathyism, emotional showers. That's pretty good.
That's right. I think that some teachers get stinky because they forget to take emotional showers at nighttime. So we definitely need those, whether it's candles, music, quiet time, or whatever makes it work for each individual person. But you have to be conscious, be mindful of an emotional shower for it to work. You have to know you're in the emotional shower. So
okay.
Hopefully we'll get some teachers pumped up a little bit to get everybody through, and it'll end better for everybody.
Good stuff, Kathy. Have a good Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you. Same to everyone. Have a hope-filled week, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye now.
All right, everyone. Great information from the First Lady of Education, Kathy Gana. Reach her at 800-300-0003. And join me Monday morning and all next week, 9 until noon, The Daily Show with Dom Giordano. Big issues, big guests. Have a great Sunday here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Dom Giordano, weekdays 9 till noon on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.